This is episode number 206 of the Well-Fed Women podcast. Welcome to Well-Fed Women. I'm your co-host, Noelle Tarr, a nutritional therapy practitioner and a certified personal trainer, and I'm joined by my bestie, Stephanie Ruper, author of the best-selling book, Sexy by Nature. On the show, we provide moderately amusing banter, authentic, unfiltered conversations relating to nutrition, fitness, mindset, and body image, and offer empowering advice for women from women. While you're listening, please keep in mind that the information on this podcast is intended to provide helpful and informative material and should not be used to diagnose or treat disease. We are so excited to have you here. So now let's have some fun.
Yo!
I feel like saying, coming to you live from my closet.
Closet!
It's really interesting when you actually think about the fact that we broadcast this and all that, but like I'm literally crouched in my closet, sitting among sweatshirts and nursing tops, and it's very glamorous lifestyle. So profesh.
It's hysterical to me how well, like when things look very well produced or sound very well produced, we assume that they look really like that it's suave in the making.
Yeah.
But when I'm recording a video and I've got this light with a scarf hanging off it, like the scarf's about to fall.
Yes.
And the webcam is like taped. You know what I mean? Like none of it. And photo shoots are exactly the same way, you know? Yeah,
that's so true.
So funny.
Yeah, if you were to like look outside of the photo, it's like some janky warehouse or whatever. Like it's so true.
Yeah, and they're so like true. They've got these, like, you know, all the different panels they use to reflect light. And some of them are professional, but some of them are, like, very weird, you know,
pieced
beat up
together.
Things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
stuff
so true.
Like that.
Yeah. So the good news is I'm in my new house.
Woo!
Woohoo! It was a bit of a week. We took last week off from recording, but it was so that I could move, so my family could move. And it's, I guess it was about 10 days ago now, but the background on this was that once we found out we were going to have a baby, it was like, oh, our lease is up right around my due date, and that just wasn't going to work. So everything went into hyperspeed. So we bought this house that's like it was sort of a flip, and we always wanted to do our own flip, but, we decided that was just going to be way too much headache, which now I'm so thankful that we did not do that, because anybody who's listening who's done renovations knows how like complicated and drawn out it gets. And it's just it takes so much effort. There wasn't a designer involved with the house. So there's like basic things that I think families need, like a place to put your trash and a pantry. Like there's no pantry. So now we're kind of building out a pantry, and the laundry room had, you know, no sort of like counter space or hanging things. So we have to put all that in. So we've been working through a lot of that. this closet. So
okay.
It's just funny that I'm sitting in this closet. These are things that you don't think about when you're renting, right? Like the bars in the closet were wood, and these are like really long bars, like probably, I'm looking at them, probably like 7 to 8 feet long. So we started hanging up our clothes, and it literally pulled the anchors out of the wall, and the bar just like sunk down. So we basically had to redo the whole closet in terms of getting actual like metal, which I'm tapping on with my fingers, metal bars that are actually heavy duty and will hold things, you know. So it's been a long week. It's been fun, but also a lot with a kid. So it's just moving with a toddler and being pregnant is not
easy,
not enjoyable, not enjoyable. And we're managing a lot of, you know, appointments, but just fine. I feel like, we just had Christmas this past weekend with my parents. So I was going to be like, how was your Christmas? But it technically hasn't been Christmas yet. But you are,
right.
Are you coming here soon?
Yeah, I'm leaving in 12 hours.
No.
Yeah.
Are you super giddy about it? Or are you just like, meh?
I have not. It's so funny. We have all these. So my family is huge, huge, huge into Christmas. And but nowadays, so many of us, we're not as close as we used to be. So nobody knows what other people like want.
Yes.
And one of my brother's wife, is really into specifics. And she has sort of developed in our family, this culture of everybody having a list, and not like, but you don't like publicly post the list. You like share it with somebody, and then the other person shares it with somebody, and it like, you know, you still have to be kind of secretive, but everybody knows that everybody has everybody's lists. And so, but I have put zero, everybody's doing all this, and I've just been so busy that I haven't put a hair of a second of thought into Christmas, as much as I love the holiday so much and I'm very excited. So tomorrow I will think about people's gifts and consult their lists on the plane, and then I will get into action swiftly. And I've even, it's close enough that I probably don't have much, I don't have time to order things online. So I have to go to stores, God forbid. Yeah, I'm very excited. Although life here is rich and exciting too. So
for Christmas, this is a great question for like list or no list. Like you have never made a list before. Like what do you, how do people know what to, like your parents and your brothers, like how do they know what to get you?
Well, when we were kids, we would write letters to Santa. So yeah. Santa always had a list, and I don't know. You just, we, my mom and I were in close communication, so she and I always know what each other needs or wants. And other people, you just sort of guess based on the hobbies they have. Like, oh, you know, like I know that he's an, if, and the better you know, where you can ask questions and figure out like what people might be into. And so, yeah, we never really did formalize lists until my new sister came. Yeah.
That's so funny. If you can guess, we are a list family.
I am sure.
We have been since the day we were born. Like, I don't, like, even when we were all living under the same roof, like, we still didn't, it's still hard. It makes the holidays really hard to, like, come up with some gift, and then you end up giving it to them, and then they never use it, or they don't like it, or whatever. So my mom even sometimes, she like, gave me the whole bag. She's like, here are all the receipts in case something doesn't work. Like, she's just very attentive to that. Like, if you didn't like something I got Stella, that's okay. Here's the receipt. But, yeah, I mean, I made a list for Stella, and I sent that out, and then it's funny because you're just describing this. I make a list and then Ken sends it out to the families, and then Ken makes a list and I send it out to the families with the thing that I love about it. And some people are so anti-list. They're like, that's not the meaning of Christmas. I get it. But also it's really helpful for my sister to send me a list and be like, okay, here I can get you one or two things and then go off the beaten path based on, you know, these things that's kind of on your wish list or things that you've been wanting and you just haven't bought yourself, like things that you, like I can go off the beaten path and get a couple things, you know, like of course everybody got beauty counter this year, but you know, it's just, it's kind of fun to do a combination of like something from the list and then some surprises. So funny. I'm like, you're describing me. You're like, we all have to like pretend like there isn't a list, but there is a list. So the other person sends it. Yeah.
But then you like, then you open your gift and
it's still exciting.
Is it? I mean, of course it's exciting because you're getting something you want, but
yeah. We had no idea anybody was getting it.
You can't be like, oh, wow, you're so thoughtful. I can't believe you came up with this really thoughtful idea.
Yeah, but how many times does that actually happen?
Well, I try really hard to make it happen often.
Does it happen a lot for you with like the gifts you get from your brothers and your parents?
Well, it used to, but now we have lists. See what I did there?
Yeah. So I totally get that. That's why I always try to go off the list, like surprises and then something on. So it's just, or, you know, if somebody's like, I really like this, whatever, you know, cast iron skillet or this like waffle maker, then I'll like try to get some waffle mix and something, you know, a couple other things to go with it. So it's like a complete package. Anyway, obviously gift giver here, raising my hand. The holidays. Do you have any, exciting? Oh no, you haven't really gotten anything yet. I was gonna say, nope. What are you excited about giving? What is the number one thing you're excited about giving?
Oh god, I don't know. We're playing this joke on my brother, which will be really fun. I can tell you this now because this is coming out after Christmas.
Yes,
but
yes.
One of the things, it's like we're actually kind of making fun of his wife, because one of the things she put on his list was that he's really into green tea right now. And everything else on the list is like $100, you know, or like, how are we going to, like, who's buying this?
Yes, I'm like, that's another problem with the list. I'm like, if everything's a minimum $100, like, what are we all supposed to do? Like, that's not how this works.
Oh, so, but also green tea is on the list. And so the rest of us are going to pretend like we just got him green tea. And so on Christmas morning, because we do the Christmas morning and everybody's there together, and we will just give him green tea until presents are over. And then we'll be like, okay, just kidding. Here's your other stuff. So that'll be fun.
Are both of your brothers married?
My older brother is married. My younger brother is engaged.
Okay. Oh, he's engaged. That's wonderful. Okay. Okay. Oh, yeah. That's so
fun. And I have a cat who's dying soon.
I remembered that your younger brother has been dating a girl for a very, very, very long time. So,
yeah, they've been together for 10 years already.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. A long time. I know. And they're perfect for each other, too. It's amazing.
That's just the best. Green tea. So do you guys do stockings?
Yes. Or we used to. But now that we have more people in the family and everybody wants like really freaking expensive gifts, it's hard to do the stockings.
It's hard to do the stockings. Yeah, it adds a lot. I'm excited. I got Stella a little kitchen, like a mini kitchen from Target. It was actually by Chip and Joanna Gaines. They have a line that they sell through Target. And so it has like a little farm sink and Subway tiles. It's really, really cute. But it's just a basic wood kitchen that's hopefully going to last us years and years. But I've been having her help, like, she really likes watching me cook and do things. And so I don't care about us getting messy and doing that kind of stuff together. So I've had her crack eggs and help me flip them in the pan. But I'm really excited about like that imaginary kind of play stuff. So I'm so excited to give her this kitchen. This is like our first Christmas that's like she sees and recognizes things. So we just did a few things over the weekend, and she had a lot of fun opening the gifts and all that kind of stuff. So she's a year and a half. So it's a good year. It's a good time. I can't wait. I'm so excited. I'm like, I want to play with this kitchen. I played with kitchen. Like, I had a kitchen in my room until, like, a toy kitchen, until I was probably like 7 or 8. I loved it. We called it playing house, which much different when you say that as an adult. But yeah, we were playing house. Okay. Do you have any announcements? I think we're pretty much ready to get into questions.
I'm ready.
Okay, let me make a quick announcement because I do have something. Okay. Bonafide Provisions is our sponsor of this podcast. We're thankful to them for being here, especially during this season, which tis the season for colds and flus. This is collagen-rich bone broth packed with all the immune-boosting benefits that are well-known now to bone broth. We've talked about those benefits a lot on here. And their bone broth is actually frozen, so you'll find it in the freezer section where you can get it delivered to your house, all frozen, meaning that they preserve the nutrients at their peak. This bone broth, I will tell you, is the most gelatinous bone broth I have ever had in my entire life. I have tons of it stocked in my freezer to get me through the cold and the flu season, and it's actually in my kid's sippy cup as we speak, because she got a runny nose from mops last week, so she's fighting it and a little cranky, so that we just do the bone broth all day, every day. So it's a really great tool for you and for your kids to help you get through the season, boost your immunity, help you get through, hopefully, those sicknesses whenever they do come along much quicker. BonafideProvisions.com/wellfed and use the code wellfed at checkout to get a discount. You can find their bone broth in the grocery stores, but I would go to BonafideProvisions.com/wellfed and use that code wellfed at checkout, and you'll get a really, really awesome deal. And just order it in bulk. Get a lot so that you can have it through the winter, which it's going to take us through March, so stock up, and really thankful to them, and they're a great company, started by two really great people who were used bone broth to help heal their son's chronic illness, so it's a really great story. Again, bonafideprovisions.com/wellfed. All right, question number one is from Sarah. Hello, ladies. I'm a longtime listener of the podcast and get so excited every Tuesday morning to hang out with you two. A huge thanks for all you've done. Thanks to you, I was able to recover my fertility after dealing with HA for 10 years, and now I'm pregnant with our first baby. My question is about how to raise kids to have a good relationship with food. I've dealt with restrictive disordered eating for years, which has contributed to my HA. By the way, side note, HA is hypothalamic amenorrhea. It's when you don't have a period. I always feel like I need to let everybody know that, because I know we have a lot of new listeners that may not know what HA is. Okay, back to the question. I've come a very long way I've come a very long way, and I feel like I have a good relationship with food, but I have no idea how to approach this with my kids. I ate a paleo-ish diet focused on real foods, lots of fruit, veggies, nuts, grass-fed meats, no dairy or gluten because those make me feel crappy. My husband eats a standard American diet besides when I'm cooking dinner for him. He really doesn't care about food quality or nutrient density. He was raised on white bread, cheese, and sugary cereals. Still prefers that. They always hold desserts over. Oh, I've watched his family navigate foods with their kids, and it makes me very nervous for my own kids. They always hold desserts over the kids' heads, so to speak, saying if they don't eat their dinner, they won't get dessert. So they've essentially put sugar and treats on a pedestal where the kids idolize it and want it all the time. Eating real food has become a chore in order to get to the sugar. I don't want this to be the case with my kids, but I don't know how to avoid that, especially when we're surrounded with people who don't prioritize a healthy diet like I do. As we're preparing to bring this new baby into our family, I'm unsure of how to help him develop a positive relationship with food. I want him to learn to appreciate real nutrient-dense food, and I don't think I'll keep a lot of sugary treats around the house, but I worry that this will only make him want them more and cause him to binge on sugary treats when he's away from our home. I also fear that if we explain we don't have treats around because they're not as healthy for his body, he will label foods as good and bad. I'd love to hear any insight you have on helping kids develop a positive relationship with food from a very young age, especially when immediate and extended family members take a very different approach to food. Thanks for, again, for all you do. Cheers.
This is a very complicated question, and of course a really tough one, because there are so many different ways to parent. I think probably one of the most important things is your example. Right? Kids learn a lot from their environments, and so I think one thing is simply to behave as best as you can in your relationship with food, whatever that means to you, to reiterate, whatever that means to you, and whether that means focusing, demonstrating how much you love veggies, right, maybe not having dessert, keeping that off the radar for a while, and then when you bring it into the radar, make it something that is, I really love what you've pointed out here about desserts being on a pedestal. I think you're right. You definitely don't want to do that. You can describe desserts as something as being uniquely sweet, but not, you know, different, and having different values, right? And there are ways to, I mean, I think Noelle has experience with this. Like, doesn't Stella love liver? Is that,
yes,
is that a
does.
Thing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so if you get them started on, like, the good savory stuff young, I think that they can develop, like, a really nice appreciation for these kinds of foods. And then when you fold in sweets, hopefully, and other kinds of treats at family desserts and the like, they can enjoy them as what they are, but will still be grounded in this appreciation for food that that you have developed by putting that into their palate really young, and then, of course, having healthy emotional relationships with food yourself. And always, I think, probably just explaining things well and doing so with empathy and compassion, but being honest. You know, you can say things like, well, sugar's really tasty, but it doesn't quite have the same health benefits. It won't kill you. You know, I don't want to give you a complex, but it doesn't make us strong and grow up and have the best teeth or whatever, like other foods do. So we don't have it all that much. And I think that sort of talk really gets through, you know, I think it really can. So I feel like I should have so much more to say, but I really believe, like, simply that kind of communicating and making sure that you build these foods into their diets really early is probably, you know, like, the best place to start. And again, being really, really good about your own behaviors and not doing anything restrictive in front of them. If you know, I think that that's really important, because I've had so many clients and friends tell me that their kids immediately pick up on that sort of thing. So I think that that's really important to bear in mind as well.
Yeah, your kids are always watching, right? And so it's first and foremost starts with you and your language around food. I think that the problem early on in the beginning is you can't communicate necessarily with your kid and have conversations with them. And I can't even have them with Stella right now, but she is picking up on my cues. And I think first and foremost, when I want you to go and look at my best first foods for baby post, first and foremost, because I think that'll give you a really, really great overview of how to introduce food to kids and then how to move through that as they get older. And one of the things that I have always done is be very cognizant of how I am treating food with Stella and how I'm reacting to her interactions. Again, I'll say that. How am I reacting to her interactions with food? So that's kind of the key thing, because we can't sit down and have a conversation, right? Because she's so young. But starting at 6 months, I think one of the first things that I always wanted for her was I wanted her to learn to self-feed. So I think it's really important that we recognize that kids are separate human beings and they are fully capable of learning and exploring, and they know food is really important to them. And so they are born with foods are not good or bad. Like, you can put, this is the coolest thing. You can put liverwurst and sardines down and they're not going to think, oh, those are gross, right? They're just not. They don't have that context. And people all over the world don't have access to like highly processed foods like we do right now in America. And if you think about it, 100, 200, 300 years ago, they didn't have access to all the things, the rice cereal that we do right now. So the general recommendation is to start with something very bland, rice cereal, and like, you know, really make sure, and I think parents really try to shift to these more easier to eat foods for their kids instead of starting with the foods that we know are really important for them. So two minerals that are, well, there's a couple different nutrients that are really, really important for babies right at 6 months, which is iron and zinc. So even if you're breastfeeding and you're supplementing with it yourself, your baby's not going to get it from breast milk. And then, of course, long-chain omega-3 fatty acids and vitamin D. So all those things, those four things are my, like, building blocks for starting initial foods with your kid. And so pick foods that have those, right? Not foods that are fortified with those in nutrients and are really bland. Start with foods that have are really tasty. Like, kids actually really like liverwurst. And so don't start giving them food too early. So in other words, they'll still be spitting it out. Make sure that they're ready for the food, but allow them to explore the food themselves so that you're not creating something and then trying to feed it to them. And then there's some sort of disconnect there, right? So I'm a huge fan of self-feeding, letting your kid explore the shapes and the textures and learn important developmental skills. And they kind of, they get more connected to the food when they can explore and they can touch it and they can decide how much of what to eat that is presented. So typically I provide, like, again, this is building your kids' intuition around food, right? So they're trying to figure out what does their body need, and you are too. And it's not an easy, like, this needs a lot of patience. Like, it's really frustrating when your kid throws everything on the floor or you have all this liverwurst and they never eat it. But it's something like in the very beginning, you may mash up a lot and let them touch and they get a little bit in and they kind of taste it and that's fine. But again, they have no perception of morality. They have no perception of good or bad. They don't know what they quote unquote should be eating versus what they should not be eating. So they're just exploring food. So it may take a month or two for your kid to come around to really picking up and eating a lot of liverwurst, but just keep exposing it to your kid and expose your kid to a variety of foods. So I have all the first foods that I think are really, really great. Of course, like salmon is one of them. And eventually egg yolks is a really powerful food for babies. But mealtime shouldn't be some sort of like battle or like force feeding session. I just think it should be an opportunity. And this is how we have to approach it, for your baby to explore, you know, hunger, intuition, and fullness and what that means. Explore that hunger, explore that fullness, explore the dynamic between the two. And this is, they're developing this skill literally throughout their entire childhood, right? And so they are still exploring that as a baby. And so offer, this is my opinion, offer nutrient-dense foods and then trust that your baby will eat what he needs. You know, that's kind of the basic. Don't feed your kid super bland foods or sugary foods or like, you know, cupcakes as one of their first foods, right? And I would be very cautious about introducing that early on. I'm not saying never let your kid have a cupcake, right? But as they're younger, you don't have to intentionally give that to them because you think that that's just going to make their life. Like, it gets exciting. Yes, I gave Stella a first birthday cake, but before that, I didn't really give her any cake or sweets or anything. There was just no reason to. She was exploring food, right? And so then I moved into, if I'm eating something, she can have it. You know, if I'm having coconut milk ice cream at night after dinner, and she kind of looks at me and she signs more, please, can I have some? Which she always does whenever I'm eating anything. I never actually get a meal to myself anymore, which is fine. You know, I will sit down on the couch and we'll share it together. Like, so I'll have a bite and she'll have a bite and I'll have a bite and she'll have a bite. And she loves it. And she just, her eyes light up and she thinks it's the best thing in the world. Now, of course, because she's a toddler and she's talking and all this stuff. But, you know, it was like when she was about 12 to 13 months, I started kind of doing that and she thought it was the best thing in the world. Did I say, oh, we can only, you know, no, you can't have any more or whatever. Like, I'd be like, that was really good. I think we're done now. Like, I don't have very much left. Let's only have a little bit left. And, you know, she would have that. And then we'd go the next morning. She'd be eating egg yolks and liverwurst. It just, I never wanted to keep her from something that I was eating or engaging with. And even when I'm eating dark chocolate, you know, in the middle of the day, she sees it and she's like, oh, more, more, more. Now she does because she knows exactly what the bag looks like. So I'll give her a chocolate chip or two. And so my whole thing has been, I choose what and she chooses how much. So I only bring things into the house that I think are like, I think they're great. Like, we have great food, you know, we have really nutrient dense food. We have coconut milk ice cream, and we have dark chocolate, and I make, you know, the Simple Mills muffins. So I don't think that you even have to be thinking about, oh, I need to have this discussion about how we don't have sweets in the house. I think when your kid is like, just start with this first, just start with this phase first, because you won't be having those discussions with your kid for like years, right? Like, because you haven't even had the baby yet. So it's going to be quite a while before you sit down and have those discussions and your kid is able to recognize, well, Johnny has candy at his house, but we have different kind of candy at home. And I want my kid to know that, like, she doesn't have to go to her friend's house to gorge herself on candy. Like, she can have candy there and she can have sweets and stuff at our house. And, you know, I think the conversation, when we get to the point where we can have the conversation, will always be around making sure that we are helping her grow and be strong. You know, like, we really want to make sure that you're growing healthy and you're being strong and that we get really nutrient dense food in that gives you lots of vitamins and minerals so your bones can be really strong. And we'll always have that conversation if she asks for, well, why don't we have more candy, you know, or why don't we have what Johnny has? We'd be like, well, we just have different things in our house, you know, we have other fun things like these brownies or these, you know. And so it's not, I don't think it's something you have to necessarily even worry about right now. I would just start with this and see where it goes. Start with sharing what you can, offering nutrient-dense foods, letting your baby decide how much of what to eat. So, for example, if you present liverwurst and egg yolks and raspberries, and your kid eats all the raspberries and is saying more, 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 signing more for the raspberries, give the kid more raspberries. You know, don't say, no, 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 you got to eat your liverwurst, because now we're creating this connection of, the raspberries are really tasty right now and I need more of them, but I have to eat the liverwurst first. So now we're creating a negative relationship with the liverwurst. So trust your kid's intuition, offer a variety of foods, and whatever your kid wants more of, give it to them. So choose the what, understanding that whatever it is that you're offering, it's okay for your kid to eat more of that, right? So like, if I'm going to give Stella raspberries and, within reason, raspberries and liverwurst, I'm going to be okay with continuing to give her a ton of raspberries as much as I have in the fridge if that's what she thinks she needs, right? I'm never going to make her feel like raspberries are something she can't have a lot of and she needs to eat her liverwurst first. Like, to her, all food is neutral, right? All food is neutral. There's no weight in any of it. So if she wants more raspberries, I'm going to give her more raspberries. And time and time and time again, I can tell you what, the child knows how to feed herself. The next day, guess what? She will eat all of, like, a half a tin of sardines and doesn't want a single raspberry. And it confuses the crap out of me. And I'm like, I just bought all these raspberries because you were eating up all the raspberries, right? And then the raspberries go bad in my fridge because she all of a sudden for a week doesn't want them. But trust that. Trust that your kid is like, really is going with his or her intuition. Don't give any one food weight so that they have to eat one food before another. And I think when you create this foundation in the beginning, your kid won't get to a place where we're holding dessert on a pedestal. It's just something we have occasionally because it's really, you know, tasty and good and it tastes good. But it's not something we have for dinner because it doesn't necessarily give us all the nutrients we need and it doesn't make us feel good if we eat a ton of it, right? So it's something that's expensive. You know, coconut milk ice cream costs a lot. And we can have that conversation as well, which is, you know, making the best financial decisions, being financially responsible with our money, getting, you know, food that has the most nutrients with that, and getting treats occasionally because they are a little bit more expensive and they don't have as much nutrients. And so, we can clearly have those conversations. Again, that won't be for years, but, you know, you can think of it that way too. It doesn't have to be, oh, we don't keep treats in the house because they're not good, or, you know, or they're bad or whatever. Like, that doesn't, again, to a new kid, that doesn't even make sense unless we give them that connotation. So start with, you know, like letting your baby explore their intuition. If they refuse food, that's fine. If they eat a ton of one food and not of another, that's fine. Just keep exposing them to all the foods. Just keep offering it. And then I keep getting these questions. A lot of people are always like, why do you offer so many different foods? And I've just always kind of done that. But my gut has always been, you know, 1 week, if she's like went through a phase of just like not eating any sardines. So I took them away for 2 weeks and I started offering a variety of other meats, and go figure, she like started eating a bunch of other stuff. Like, oh, now she eats, you know, chicken, and she eats these sausages that we make, which she never used to eat before. And then 2 weeks later, I'll bring it back and there you go. She eats like half a tin of sardines again. So I offer a lot of variety. I intentionally try to offer a lot of different protein options and a lot of different fruit options depending on the season, what's affordable, right? Because things get really expensive, like raspberries in the wintertime. So, you know, just be intentional about offering a variety of things too and continuing to expose your kid to something. And it's an understanding, it's okay if your kid doesn't eat liverwurst. That's okay. Like it's really great, but it's also okay. You can try something else. Try like a liver pate, or try doing something different with grass-fed beef and doing like grass-fed meatballs, and just offering it in a different way so that your kid is getting the nutrients that he or she needs, but also not being shy about continual exposure and knowing that this is years and years. This isn't like, oh, my baby keeps refusing liverwurst they've done it for the last three weeks. I mean, no, I've had to expose Stella to foods for months and months before she even started eating it. So just keep exposing all the foods. Don't, like you said, bribe or say you have to eat that before that. And I think if you work off of the principle, I choose what and he chooses how much, that really puts it into context, because that really checks me. Because sometimes I do want to say, well, Stella, I put a bunch of this on your plate, like eat it, you know, but she's doesn't want it. And she wants more of whatever is unfortunately the most expensive food of the day or whatever. It's like, okay, well, I'll give you more of that. And so I have to check myself and make sure that I'm not getting into that game of, you have these on your plate, eat this. And I just say, okay, is that what you want more of that? You want, when I constantly am having conversations with her about that. And again, if you're eating something, I'm always I always operate, if I'm eating it, it's okay for her to eat it. You know, within reason, like obviously I'm not drinking alcohol, and I don't give her coffee, but if I did, she would probably spit it out. Actually, she's never even asked for that, which is funny. You know, if I'm eating something, I'm going to share it with her. I'm never going to be like, oh no, this is not, you can't have this. Like, that doesn't make sense either to them. So I'm just sort of like, if I'm eating a chocolate chip, she can have a chocolate chip in the middle of the morning. But, you know, we're not going to eat the whole bag of chocolate chips. Like, she's going to, if I'm going to eat a little bit, then I'll give her one or two and I'll put it away and we go on to other things. And if she comes to me and tells me she's hungry, then we sit down and we have another meal. So I think that that's the foundation that you can operate from. Again, I touched on some of this in my post, but this is just kind of based on my research, but also based on my intuition, how I've kind of decided to approach it with her. And again, we don't give food a lot of weight. It's what we do when we're hungry, right? It's not something that we use as rewards or like, let's eat, or Stella, here's this. Can you eat this? Like, I put the food out. She eats it if she wants to. If she doesn't, we go on and we play. You know what I mean? It's not like I'm trying to coach her into eating or I try to feed her. It's like, it's largely something that she gets to control. And I think that that is where she has such a healthy relationship with food right now. And again, I'm not saying, oh, I've done the wonderful things, but, and like this, she's this way because of me. But I think we do have huge influence on our kids, especially in this area early on. And so it's just going to be a constant thing and it's always dynamic and it's going to change, but it's something that we have to check ourselves with and watch our reaction to their reactions. And so again, it's food. It's just food. It's what we eat. It's how we fuel ourselves. And that's very important, but it's not something that's, we need to put so much weight on and really focus on and make sure that she is eating and what, like, if she doesn't want to eat, that's fine. You know what I mean? So, don't overthink what you need to do years down the road. Just start with right now, which is next year at this time, you'll be introducing solid foods. So start there. And start with my blog post. Okay. Anything else from you, Stephanie?
Nope.
Okay. Question number two is from Natalie. Dear ladies, first of all, I want to say in reference to your statement about skipping ahead that I am pro banter at the beginning of the podcast. I love it. It makes me feel like I'm just hanging out with some girlfriends of mine. I love how you two speak what's on your mind and let us know on your own, in your own lives. I have been listening to you guys since the beginning. Yes, I made it through all 200 episodes and re-listened to some as well. That's great. I have come a long way from gaining the 40 pounds of extra needed weight and going from 6 days. I love how you say extra needed weight. That's really great because a lot of people say extra weight, but we have this connotation. This is a very tangent, sorry. But we have this connotation that extra weight is somehow a negative thing, and it's not. It's not. Sometimes it's actually like we need the extra weight. That is how our body operates best, right? The extra needed weight and going from 6 days a week for 3 hours of mostly cardio exercise to three to four times a week for 30 to 45 minutes of cardio strength training. Also, I joust the eat strictly paleo, but not I realized that my body can tolerate all kinds of foods and it was just the disordered eating make me feel like I needed to eat a certain way to be healthy. Now my question is how do you find contentment in your own path and not get caught up in the comparison trap? I find myself always looking and comparing. I then start to judge myself to others and I start to not feel good enough. I'm too fat. I'm too lazy. I'm not driving enough. I'm not doing the right things. How did you girls learn to find joy and compassion in your own path and not let the insta-famous influence how you feel about yourself and your path and your body? I would put more emphasis on the body rather than the other aspects of life. Working on eating and working out for me and not caring about what others think. Thanks.
Yeah, this is great. I think first and foremost, we need to be clear about the types of people we are. Well, no, maybe that's not first and foremost. We need to, it wasn't until you hit the Insta point that I was like, oh, huh. Step one, unfollow them, period. Like step one, unfollow. And since you've listened to all the episodes, you know that we've said that probably on every episode. Step one, unfollow. And, you know, I have had periods where I have been sort of sucked back into looking at that kind of thing, you know, and thinking, oh, yeah, maybe, you know, I'll jump back into the race. And I'm sorry, since you've listened to all the episodes, I'm probably not going to say anything completely original that I haven't said before, but I'll try. Definitely unfollow. And even, I think stepping away from TV and movies, I know that that's crazy because everybody consumes media, but when I watch movies and there are these actresses in them that are paid lots of money to look a particular way, like it does sort of hit that tender spot that I've got shuffled away to a little corner in the back of my brain. And when I'm conscientious about it, I don't necessarily like fall down the rabbit hole. I sort of see the sensitive spot being touched, but I don't have to follow it, so to speak. And that's, I think, probably as good as it's going to get. And again, I see it happening, but it's not a totally, you know, it's not necessarily always a painful experience. But if comes a point, and sometimes occasionally there does, when it does seem like it's more than just a little press Then I step away, you know, and I find media to consume that, you know, read books, right? You can totally make the people in your head look however you want, right? Reading books is an excellent way to get away from the visual impact that our social norms have on us. So I definitely do that. And that's just very, very important. I think another really important piece is to surround yourself. And this is why I mentioned earlier, thinking about who we're comparing ourselves to. We need to surround ourselves with people, men and women, who don't believe in this competition. You know, womanhood is so competitive. Like a quick, very quick aside, just to demonstrate how competitive womanhood is. And y'all know that I salsa dance a lot. And the male salsa dancers are all kind of friends with each other, and the women are not, right? And it would behoove us to be friends, but everybody is so like worried about competing with other women that we rarely build friendships with one another. And isn't that just like astounding, you know? And so we need to really focus on building each other up and surrounding ourselves with people who like to build each other up, and to focus on conversations about depth and our feelings and society and culture and all that sort of stuff, and stepping away from this experience of womanhood as a competition against other women. You know, and we've also talked on this podcast before about how when you're really, really slender, you will start to get a disproportionate number of women complimenting you or commenting on the way you look and saying, oh, you look great. You know, and I'm just totally leaving men out of the picture here, but women, often the more trim you get, the more you're adhering to these standards, the more they might develop jealousy, you know, or you might move up some hierarchy in different kinds of social circles. And that's a very real thing. And there might be some men who ascribe to that too. I know that there are, but there are also many who don't. And I think less than women, because they're not in this same sort of competitive, self-hating race that so many, you know, so many of us feel that we're a part of. And so I would really encourage you to think about the kinds of people who are around you. They are just as, if not quite a bit more important than the kinds of media that you're consuming. So I would definitely focus on those two things. I think another thing that's really important to bear in mind, and this is something that I've said on the podcast a lot to reiterate, so I apologize for the redundancy. I think a very important piece is to hold in front of you firmly and proudly and make it apparent to yourself by taping things on your wall or on those little blank spots on your laptop. I've got sticky notes all over my desk and my laptop. The values that you hold most dear and the ones that make you feel excited to be you and to be doing what you're doing in the world. You know, if I had to choose between being a model, a supermodel, and Malala, you know, Michelle Obama, and this isn't to say that being beautiful and being productive are mutually exclusive. I actually think that's a conversation for another time. Productivity is something for the world that makes us beautiful. I don't, in the metaphorical sense, I don't think that our energy as human beings is best directed towards the way that we look. I really strongly feel like the things that are the kinds of beauty that I want to be are ones that are being good and kind and sure, confident, you know, but mostly taking care of other people and myself and being a good citizen and all these sorts of things. Those are the kinds of things that I really value and try to hold up for myself. And time and energy are limited. You only have so much time in a day. And you only have so much willpower in a day, really, when it comes down to it. And what are you going to spend your willpower on? Are you going to spend your willpower on only eating carrots for lunch? Or are you going to spend your willpower on getting whatever you need to get done for your kids or your family or your job or what have you? And time is limited. And are you going to spend 2 hours, 3 hours of cardio every day? Or are you going to spend those 3 hours studying something or reading the newspaper or reading books or, you know, any of these sorts of things? I think there's a real value shift. And when you start to shift your values away from aesthetics and getting attention based on these fairly superficial things and surrounding yourself with people who feel the same, because trust me, there are very many people out there in the world who do feel the same like us, you know, then you feel it more deeply in your bones, the importance of these kinds of things and the weight and the pressure of looking a particular way. It fades away and it stays, you know, like I said, I've got that little sensitive bit that can be prodded, and sometimes more so than others, definitely. But it becomes easier to tell to be quiet, you know, and just keep on keeping on with your life. So, yeah, I'll leave it at that. I've talked a lot.
Yeah. So I just rereading the question, how do you find contentment in your own path, not get caught up in the comparison trap? I think that our modern society has a very difficult time with this, and a new challenge in the fact that we do live exclusively online, and we do see everybody's highlight reel. And so we are always seeing the best posts of everyone, and people can say, oh, well, here's this real life post. And, like I've heard people complain and then go to the other side of that and say like, well, I'm just going to post the real stuff that's happening. But the truth is, like, we're not seeing everybody's day to day. We're not seeing the hard stuff. We're seeing everybody's the hard work and then basically the success of that hard work, whether that be, you know, a kid smiling in front of a Christmas tree, not really saying what the situation was before or after, you know, the tantrums and all that stuff. Or it's like, you know, a blog, a website, a product, a flourishing business where we compare ourselves and say, gosh, look at my life. Like, I'm just trying to get started. Like, I'm trying to get my business off the ground. But all these people, like, look at this person. She's doing so much better than me. And, you know, we can always find somebody who's doing it so much better than us online, on social media. And I think that the first and foremost thing that we have to understand is that what we see is not always the reality. And we have to really, and I think that this is one of the wonderful things about aging and maturity and the beauty of getting into your 30s, because I think your 30s is this, so far as what I've experienced, is this beautiful time where you settle into yourself and you understand what it is that you really want to do and who you are and what you value. And I think that, you know, in the last few years, especially understanding what life is really all about for me, you know, being a mom and raising this amazing kid and being a good wife and being a good person and giving back and being involved in my church, like all those things have so much more weight to me and are so much more fulfilling than what I used to do in my 20s, which was, you know, spend a lot of time chasing after finding my worth in how I looked, what I was doing for fitness, what I was eating, what I was hashtagging, even, you know, how I was building my business. And not to say that, you know, that's not, I mean, of course, that's very important to me now. And I love that aspect of my life, my work. But I've stopped comparing where I am in my work to where other people are, because frankly, I don't care. And I think that it's come with maturity, but it's also comes with really having an understanding of what's valuable to you and where your worth lies. And we have to get outside of talking about bodies and talking about fitness and talking about health. Yes, that's important. I know that it's important, and it's important to talk about, you know, sugar's impact and the impact of heavy metals and, you know, how important it is to have vitamin D. And I think that those little nuggets are very, very important. And I love doing that. That's what I do for a living. I help people. I bring attention to these things. And I think that that's really great. But it doesn't have to be about comparison. It doesn't have to be about, well, what am I doing in comparison to other people? Or what does my body look like? And I feel like I want to move forward with this arena and stop talking about bodies. We don't have to talk about bodies in this conversation anymore. Of course, we do. We talk about how that doesn't equate to your health or your worth, but so many people do. And so when you become rooted in your own beliefs and your own values and in your, you know, where your worth lies, I think that it's just easier. You know, you can see when other people are, when, for example, when you see an Instagram post and it's somebody who's doing something better, smarter, and faster than you, and they're in CrossFit every day or whatever, you can see that and say, great for them, not right for me, you know, or you can say, wow, you know, they're really putting a lot of weight in their mirror selfies. And I'm glad that I don't. You know, that's all you have to say. Like, we can look at things now and recognize what they are and not jump into the comparison. So I think that it's really important to, yes, remove that stuff from your life, but do the internal work that is required to move past always being focused on your body size or always being focused on who you are in comparison to other people. Because that will never get you anywhere. Right? There's no happiness there. And so we have to kind of undo that belief system and rebuild some new conversations. So it's going to take, of course, a lot of surrounding yourself with positive people and people who aren't that way and people who are unapologetically themselves. And I think that we can learn from those people, but it does take some internal work on your own part for figuring out what is it, you know, what are the other things in your life that are valuable and worthy of your time and worth doing. And I just find that when we focus on bodies so much, and I this is a total side rant, but it's, you know, back in the day I used to, and I still struggle with this, but I feel like we've moved into this world now where we are kind of all talking about body positivity. But we're talking about body positivity within the context of look at my body kind of thing still. And so even when we talk about our bodies or when we're making a proclamation about our body, you know, we're still focusing on our body and we're still posting photos of our body. And I think that that's great. And I think that's important for a lot of people's journey. For example, I think it was important for me way back in the day, like when I first did that post about not wanting six pack abs and I posted photos of my midsection, that was really uncomfortable. And I, you know, it was nice to do it before the bubble because that's what got my blog a lot of attention, right? And it put me on the map. And so that was an important part of my journey. But now I've moved past needing to take photos of my abdominal muscles or lack thereof, the lack of, you know, abs showing, because it doesn't matter. You know, we can talk about health and I don't have to talk about how I don't have abs. You know, we're still, when we do that, we're still focused on the body. And so I think that, you know, when we don't need to continue to like, you have to be careful of even the, and I'm not saying like, oh, it's harmful to follow people who are constantly posting, you know, photos of themselves and their midriffs, even if they're not six pack abs. I'm just saying, like, even see that for what it is, which is kind of still focusing on the body. So let's move past that and see that there's a lot more involved with your health and who you are as a person. And there's so much going on in your life. And we don't have to really, we can talk about health and fitness and all that stuff without really focusing on all the physical characteristics of your body. And so, you know, it's just something to think about, not necessarily part of the answer of this question, but even just moving forward, taking kind of the focus off of that. And again, not comparing yourself, your every physical characteristic or every physical trait to other people, even in that context, which is, again, something that is can be problematic for people who are at different parts of their journey, and focus and just getting beyond talking about bodies, and other things. What are the other things in your life that are really important? And understanding that fitness and healthy food has a very important part in a healthy life. But we don't have to compare, like what we do is not, there is no one thing that's better than another thing. So just because somebody is doing strict paleo doesn't actually mean that they're healthier than you, right? And so we have to break down a lot of these myths that exist around health and fitness and all that kind of stuff. And so if somebody, I think that that's at the end, how we break free of the comparison trap. We realize that if somebody is doing something stricter or doing more fitness, that doesn't actually mean that they're better than you or that they're healthier than you. And if they were doing more than you, or let's just say they even were healthier than you, they're still not better than you. Like, truth bomb there. Somebody's healthier than you. They're not more worthy of a person. That can be somewhere you want to get, right? But you're working with your situation, with your body, and what you do may be different than what that other person does. So I think it's important. And if you have goals to, you know, improve your fitness and all that stuff, that's really great. But it's you versus you. And I think that that's a wonderful thing about, you know, just maturity and getting older too and exploring all this stuff. Like we get to move past a lot of that. This podcast is brought to you by Thrive Market, an online marketplace on a mission to make healthy living easy and affordable for everyone. Thrive Market is like Whole Foods, Amazon Prime, and Costco combined. You can shop for thousands of health foods and natural products, including non-GMO foods, snacks, vitamins, supplements, eco-friendly cleaning supplies, baby and kids items, and so much more at 10 to 50% below retail prices. They can offer these prices because they cut out the middleman and ship products directly to you. They also have their own Thrive Market brand, which offers everything from organic virgin coconut oil to grass-fed collagen peptides, all the way to eco-friendly, chlorine-free disposable diapers, which my daughter wears, by the way, at incredibly affordable prices. To get 25% off your first purchase, head over to thrivemarket.com/wellfedwomen. That's 25% off on top of the discounts you already get on Thrive Market. Head over to thrivemarket.com/wellfedwomen. Question number three is from Jenna. How did you get into such a healthy headspace with your weight? Is there certain tips you have on combating diet culture and not getting deceived into thinking that you are doing the wrong thing? On one of your podcasts, Noelle, you mentioned that people say it's wrong for you to have such dessert at night and that you simply just don't care if they think that. How did you get in such a healthy space? I pretty much just answered that question. Do you have anything else to add, Stephanie, on that front? Like just not caring about.
I think generally speaking, I think you can practice not caring about what other people think and start. Once you start in any realm, including diet and other things, once you start, you sort of realize that it's not the end of the world. A, if they're good friends, they will continue to love you. B, if they're not good friends, they'll go away and that'll be great. Right. So I really do believe that it's important in matters of you taking care of yourself that you establish with the people around you that you're doing what you think you need to do for you, what's best for you physically, emotionally, whatever. You know, I got my stuff. I have to tell people all the time because people are always curious about my habits. And I always just say, like, look, I can't tell you how much I know about this sort of thing. I can't tell you how much I've lived in my own body. And you just have to trust me. You know, I'm doing what is good for me. And if people don't, then that's a really terrible thing for them to not want you to take care of yourself. I'm serious.
Then they suck. Yeah, you don't owe anybody an explanation, you know? And I think that, again, you come to this conclusion when you try to please other people and realize it doesn't work. Whether it be with your food or your fitness or whatever, it doesn't work. People are thinking about you so little. People are pretty narcissistic in our society. And it's not necessarily, okay, narcissistic is a very big deal. So I'm not going to say that. I won't give it that massive of a label. We are just more self-consumed, right? And so you think people are thinking so much about you and what you're doing. And like, they really aren't, you know, they may think about you for like a minute and that's about it. And then they move on to other things. And so it's just getting radically, just unapologetically, you know, grounded and rooted in who you are, what you know works for you, and knowing that everybody has an opinion. You know, everybody has an opinion. That doesn't mean that it's true or fact. And I operate off of a very interesting paradigm. And this is, again, what I operate off of, even in the medical, when I get medical advice or medical advice, you know, what decisions I make for my children is, you know, if somebody says something, I don't automatically think, oh, that must be true. Even if it's coming from a doctor, I'm not like, oh, that's true. I inherently know it's their opinion. It's their opinion or their interpretation based off of their influences, whether that be their research or their experiences. And so I can take that opinion and say, I'm going to go with that. Or I can say, I'm going to look into that. You know, I'm going to see if there's any validity behind this recommendation, which is not having dessert at night or not having chocolate before, you know, in the middle of the day or for breakfast or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, whatever. So is there any validity behind saying this, and does it actually make people more healthy? And I think when you have a comprehensive view of health, which is what we talk about here all the time, which is it is very physical, mental, and emotional. And you know that we, how little, like the more I learn, the more I realize I know so little. And I think that's a very healthy understanding to have, which is the more you know, the more you realize you don't know. And especially the literature and the science on nutrition is just so crappy. And there's actually very little quality research on it. And so most 9 times out of 10 when people make these claims, it's not really weighted or rooted in any factual based literature, or there's no real evidence for it. Is there a lot of evidence for a lot of things? Yeah. Like, we know how impactful aluminum is on the body. We know how impactful vitamin D deficiency is on the body. And so, like, I feel like when we make recommendations about certain supplements and stuff like that, like, that's pretty important. And I would love for you to make sure that you're working with your doctor and stuff like that. But like, claims like don't eat dessert at night. Like, it just, to me, I'm like, and what does that do versus eating dessert for breakfast? Like, what? So, like, what are you saying? Never eat dessert or just don't eat it at night? And is there literature that shows, you know, eating dessert at night somehow makes you less healthy? You know, and are we talking about physical health, or have we factored in mental and emotional health? What was the literature looked at on this? And so it's just like, I just don't care, you know, like I don't care about somebody's opinion unless it's somebody that I trust and that I've also done my research on the things. And so I don't know. I think when you have that understanding that it's all, it's always like an interpretation or like an opinion from somebody. And then you find those people that you trust and you do take those opinions a little bit with more weight, which I think our community does with us or with, you know, but I have those people in my life too, which I do hold their opinion with a lot more weight. And so you have to find those people and kind of like just ignore the others. So
right. And then it's like, and then you should be having a conversation as opposed to them telling you what you should be doing. Right. Yes. Like, okay, you have an opinion. Let's talk about pros, cons. And I think you're absolutely right that people are like often very uneducated about this sort of thing and make blanket statements anyway. I have a very clear memory once of standing in a buffet line and somebody said, hummus is really healthy. And I looked at them and I said, why? And they were like, because it is. I'm like, that's not a good enough reason for me, you know?
Yes. It's not. I love the follow-up. Why?
Why?
Can you tell me why?
Dessert is bad at night. Why?
Yeah. Talk to me about why that is and what kind of dessert and what are we talking about? What is,
and then you'll make them look dumb and everything will be fine.
Yeah. See, I don't like doing that either.
I know.
I hate doing that. Because like I have all these conversations going on in my head and I'm like, I shouldn't say this because this is going to just... it's going to like, then it's going to turn into a battle. So you do it like Stephanie said, you do, like, I love that she's just like, hey, just trust me on this. Like, I know what works for me. This is what I'm doing. Like, you don't have to do this. It's just working for me. So, you know, I think one of the things that's, we've really developed into as, you know, a podcast community, as a podcast culture, is there's no one thing that works for every single person. And while something may work really well, like low carb may work really well for one person, that's not how it's, that doesn't necessarily bring health, or that's not the only way to health for everybody else, right? So yeah, I think that we, once you have that context too, you have to create a new foundation and then kind of like create your own path based on that. So yes. Great discussions today. This has been the Well-Fed Women podcast. Go to coconutsandkettlebells.com for more from me. Go to paleoforwomen.com for more from Stephanie. Make sure to leave us a review for the book if you've gotten it, Coconuts and Kettlebells. Hopefully a lot of you got it for Christmas. A lot of you said you put it on your list. It's a great book. Awesome recipes. I've been making a lot throughout the holidays. I know all of you guys are going to like them. Leave us a review on Amazon if you can. That really helps us. And if you have questions, send them to wellfedwomen@gmail.com. We will talk to you next week.